Hello, welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, December 23rd, 2005, and this is episode number 35. First of all, I'm back. Just when you thought that all was lost and that you would never hear another MotoGPOD show, well, you know, here I am, live and on the air, so to speak. I did a lot of walking around carrying a lot of heavy crap for those 2 weeks. And I spent the last week recovering and trying to catch up at work. It's been a little difficult and catching up at home, too, you know, what with the holiday season and all. But it is definitely good to be back, and I'm happy to be in another podcast. We've got several items to cover today with some relatively fresh news items and a report on the Sepang and Jerez MotoGP test sessions that took place at the end of November. That news is not so fresh, but it was pretty interesting stuff, and I was out of town and away from all news, not just MotoGP news, for a couple of weeks, and so I figure I want to talk about that a little bit. Before we get to all that, I do want to send a huge thank you to John Chartier. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it there, John. But thank you very much for that donation that you sent. Appreciate it a lot. It's good to be. It's a good start for building up the MotoGPOD coffers after some hardware purchases that I made last month kind of dwindled everything down, and I appreciate it a lot. Thank you, John. Also, while I was away, Apple Computer, changed the iTunes interface a little bit, and they added a top sports podcast thingy. It's kind of a green square logo with a foot kicking a soccer ball. And when you click on this, it lists the little icons of each podcast of the top 42 sports-related podcasts. And MotoGPOD is listed in there. In fact, on Thursday, MotoGPOD was number 25. So I think that's pretty cool, considering that there's like 812 sports podcasts listed in the overall sports category of iTunes. I'm pretty happy to be in the top 42. That's top 5%. And it's definitely added to our subscriber numbers big time, with like a more than 20%, almost 25% increase since the end of November. So in about 3 weeks. We've increased huge numbers. So a big welcome to all of you new listeners out there. I really hope that you like what you hear and that you continue to download the shows. The show normally comes out every Friday, and during the MotoGP season, I do a race report on Mondays as well. So, you know, feel free to check out the website at www.motogpod.com or send me an email or whatever. The address is always motogpod@motogpod.com. And I do, you know, answer every email. I got a little behind with the ones that came in while I was gone on my 2.5 weeks, but I tried to answer them, and I do know there was one that had some questions, and I haven't answered it yet, and I'm going to do that tomorrow. So if you're listening out there, and Daniel, I am going to be sending you that email. And one more thing happened while I was away. Two new motorcycle-related podcasts appeared, at least two that I found. The first is the Road Racer podcast. It's hosted by John Bunce, focusing mainly on AMA and amateur racing, and the second is called MotoCast, which is kind of more general motorcycling, and it's kind of three guys all doing the hosting there, and it's pretty cool. You can find the Road Racer podcast at roadracerpodcast.com, and MotoCast is at motocastonline.com, and of course, I'm going to put links to those sites in the show notes that'll show up on the motogpod.com website. So you can find them, and I encourage you to listen to them. They're both good shows, kind of interesting, and raising the bar for production values. I think overall, MotoCast is, you know, they've got the three guy thing going on, and they've got some good interviews already. Pretty good people that they're interviewing. So definitely a hard act to follow there. All right, I think that about covers all of this sort of business stuff and preface to the show. So let's get on with it, and here we go. Jose Luis Cardoso and Alex Hoffman will ride for the new Danton Ducati MotoGP team in 2006. Cardoso returned to the World Championship after a stint in World Superbikes, which last year he rode at Yamaha, while Hoffman gets another chance in the Premier Class after Kawasaki opted not to extend his contract at the end of last season, leaving Hoffman somewhat confused as to where he might be able to find a ride, and he managed to sign on with Danton Ducati, which is cool. Hoffman is delighted with the chance being afforded him by the Danton team, and he is looking forward to putting his miserable 2005 season behind him. Hoffman said, "I am looking forward to this new challenge, and I will fight as hard as I can for the team, Being in a private team, we will have to fight very hard to keep up with the factory teams, but that just motivates me even more. Number 66 is back. In an interview with MotoGP.com, team manager Luis Dantin revealed that the team would continue their partnership with Ducati. However, he refused to confirm details of who would be providing tires for the team next season, insisting that he would reveal that information in a short time when he had more details. In 2005, Dantin Ducati writer Roberto Rofo rode on Dunlops, and he had a terrible season. And I don't think the Dunlops were the only reason for that, not by any means. But if Dantin can work a deal with Bridgestone, that might suit the riders and bikes better, because that's what the factory Ducati team is using. And, you know, assuming that there's a sharing of data between the factory team and the satellite team, it would be a big help to be on the same tire. So I think that would definitely be a big benefit to them. So I'll let you know as soon as I hear anything about that. And congratulations to Cardoso and Hoffman for, you know, securing a ride. Lucio Cecinello's LCR Team Carrera has secured a deal with Honda Racing Corporation to enter an RC211V in the 2006 MotoGP season. A press release published by LCR announced the deal with Honda without confirming their rider, but team manager Cecinello says that Casey Stoner is set to sign on. And you remember that Casey Stoner rode for LCR Team Carrera last year in the 250 series. Cecinello said, "Casey contacted me to tell me that he was available, and we quickly reached an agreement. We just have to sign the amended contract." Stoner was contacted by the team to race in the 250cc World Championship in 2005 and 2006, with an option to move up to MotoGP in 2007. So the new deal will specify that he will race for us in the MotoGP class for the next two seasons. "We have agreed on the terms of the deal with the rider. We just have to sort out a few technical details, which should be quickly addressed." Cecinello revealed that his original plans were thrown into doubt when Stoner agreed to test with the Honda Pons team at both Valencia and Sepang. Cecinello thought that he had lost the Australian, but he was relieved when Stoner got back in contact and informed him he was still a free agent. Cecinello continued, "It has been a pretty difficult period after the end of the season. Before the end of the championship, we were clearly looking at a move to the MotoGP class. We had the rider, an agreement with Yamaha, and a spot on the MotoGP grid." Notice that Cecinello said Yamaha there. "What happened is that Sito Pons couldn't contract Max Biaggi and made an interesting offer to Stoner. So we lost our rider and couldn't move forward with the project. Almost 2 months later, Casey eventually told us he was available again, and in the meantime, he had tested the Honda and was willing to race on this machine, so we talked with HRC to make it possible." So LCR was going to, you know, try to get a Yamaha motorcycle to race, and they ended up, now that they've worked out a deal to get a Honda motorcycle to race. It's kind of interesting stuff. And it's still not over yet, despite the sound of the story. There is no contract from according to Sito Pons, which we're going to hear in the next segment a little bit more, that Stoner has not signed anything and is thus possibly still available. So it's probably not truly a totally done deal, but we'll have to see. And it was kind of a puff press release there that we had. And it is good that Cecinello is the LCR team Carrera has got a motorcycle to ride, and it looks like they're going to have a rider and all of that sort of thing for the 2006 season. This is good. It's good for the health of MotoGP, and it's what we want to see. So kind of interesting. And of course, you know, I'll let you know more as soon as I know it. Alrighty. On December 20th, Japan Tobacco International, which is the Camel in Camel Honda Pons, they issued a press release. This press release is somewhat grim for several reasons. So, first of all, let me read the release. "Over the last 3 years, Camel, together with Honda and the Honda Pons team, have achieved many successes in the premier class of the World Road Racing Championship. However, recent differences of opinion with the Japanese manufacturer concerning the choice of riders has meant that the 2006 project, in which Max Biaggi was planned to ride for the Camel team, has not been able to take off. Japan Tobacco International, proprietor of the Camel brand, considers the veto against the rider as unjustified from many points of view, and has thus decided to break off relationships in MotoGP with Honda and with the Pons team. Since the last World Championship race, a number of opportunities with many other manufacturers, a number of opportunities with other manufacturers were examined, and negotiations started to make the project with Max Biaggi a reality. Although carried out with great determination, none of these came to fruition, and it has become apparent that this objective simply cannot be achieved. In order to ensure continuity of the strategy for the Camel brand, JT International is thus considering a series of alternatives. Roberto Zani, president of Japan Tobacco International Europe, said, "We put considerable energy and great determination into the MotoGP project with Max, even when it became quite clear that this could not be done with Honda, but in the end it proved impossible. The obstacles we found ourselves up against were various, decisive, and in a sense inexplicable. It seems that the sporting spirit, which has always been part of motorcycle racing and which has given the public its great passion for this sport, has suddenly disappeared. It is this passion for sport which, on the contrary, remains a driving force for our group, the philosophy on which we have based all our activities in the world of motorsport." And then there was another paragraph, but it wasn't very interesting. So, as they say, that sucks. It's not entirely unexpected that Biaggi is ending up without a ride. That was starting to become apparent even, you know, in the middle of November. But for Cito Pons to lose his primary sponsor like this is really not a good thing at all. Dennis Noyes wrote an article that's on the Speed TV website, an article about this, and it's really worth reading. One of the things that Noyes mentions is that the latest word in Spain is that Pons might try to get the Spanish mail service, Postal, on as a sponsor. Hopefully, Cito Pons can work something out on that. It would definitely be a tragedy to see the team fold, and, you know, I don't really think it's going to come to that. Dorna doesn't want that to happen. I don't think Honda wants that to happen. And I'm certain that Cito Pons doesn't want that to happen. So, you know, Carlos Checa is still with Pons as of now. He should be able to field at least a one-rider team, sponsored possibly by Postal or somebody else. And there's also still the possibility that Casey Stoner may ride for Pons rather than for Cecinello. Because, like I said, even though LCR Team Carrera says that there's a contract, according to Cito Pons recently, there isn't one. We'll just have to kind of wait and see on that and figure out exactly what's going to happen. And then there was speculation that I saw on some of the internet forums that JTI might be using this as sort of an excuse as much as anything. You know, that they're going to have to get out of the sports advertising because of the tobacco bans that are coming up in all these countries everywhere. And so maybe this is a chance for them to back out on their terms rather than be pushed out. I'm not 100% sure if I subscribe to that idea or not, but it was an interesting one, and it made a certain amount of sense in a way that, you know, it would allow them to almost save face, you know, where they're, well, you know, we're going to take our toys and go home rather than the, you know, being told that you no longer welcome here. We don't want your money because of legal status. As it is, I think that Honda's situation with Biaggi has kind of spiraled out of control. And I can see it from Honda's point of view that they don't want Biaggi riding a Honda because of the comments that Biaggi has made and how difficult he's been to work with the whole season. But it definitely snowballed because it looked for a while there like Biaggi was going to be getting a Kawasaki ride. And, you know, that's not going to happen either. He's just persona non grata with all the Japanese companies, and that includes, you know, Bridgestone, all the manufacturers, and pretty much everybody, apparently, except Japan Tobacco International, who still loves him. And there was talk about Biaggi going to World Superbike, but Biaggi has pretty much said that, you know, he's not gonna, he would retire before he does that. However, what Biaggi has said and what actually happens are going to be two different things. But even if he does go to World Superbike, they're running out of rides over there, and who's he going to be with? And then you've still got, if he's still going to stick with Japan Tobacco International as a sponsor and the Camel sponsorship that Biaggi's had for so long, which, you know, even when he was riding the Repsol Honda last year, if you'll notice, his hat was always a Camel hat. If he does have that sponsorship in World Superbike, you know, that's going to cause all kind of conflicts as well. So, I don't know. We might have seen the last of Max, but we may not have. And the thing is he is a good rider. He's very talented, and it would be good to see him continue riding. But I don't think it's going to be happening in 2006, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I went out riding this weekend. Yeah, I made 6 miles the whole weekend. Bad, we hit like 13 bars. Yeah, I had to do that after I polished the chrome. No, I got the skulls.
Is this the only kind of talk you get about motorcycles?
If you'd rather talk about riding than polishing knobs, join us for MotoCast. MotoCast Online. Patches on
it. And, man, it gets hot. I sometimes don't wear that. And them damn helmets. Oh, who can wear them helmets, man? You can't see nothing with them damn things on. You know what I'm talking about?
Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca issued a press release detailing some improvements that will be made at the track, including increased runoff at Turn 1 and a complete track resurfacing. The press release reads, construction is set to begin on nearly $7 million of improvements to Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, part of an ongoing safety and facility upgrade for the world-renowned circuit. These improvements are scheduled for completion in time for the Red Bull U.S. Grand Prix, July 21st through the 23rd, 2006. The most dramatic improvements include an entire surface repaving, as well as creating additional runoff at Turn 1. Adding runoff at the fast first turn requires removing a portion of the hillside, as well as the former media center building that sits atop it. A state-of-the-art hospitality center will replace the former media center building. Additional runoff will also be added at turns 3, 4, 6, and 7. The improvements are being made with input from the FIM, the World Motorcycle Racing Governing Body, and the MotoGP Rider Safety Commission. These new changes follow a Yamaha-funded $2 million upgrade that occurred 1 year ago, making it possible for MotoGP World Championship to return to the United States for the first time since 1994 as the 2005 Red Bull U.S. Grand Prix. Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca is the only racetrack in the United States to receive Grade A homologation from the FIM, as well as Grade 2 homologation from the FIA, which is the automotive equivalent to the FIM. Necessary permits to complete the work have been acquired, and demolition of the existing media center will take place December 27th at 8 a.m., which is pretty cool because demolition is always fun. Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca was built in 1957 and has been operated since its inception by the Sports Car Racing Association of the Monterey Peninsula, a.k.a. SCRAMP, or perhaps S-CRAMP. The world-renowned 2.238-mile 11-turn permanent road course has seen many of the all-time greats in motorsports grace its technically challenging layout that includes the spectacular signature corkscrew at turns 8 and 8A. Among the many who have raced here are the likes of Mario Andretti, Wayne Rainey, Kenny Roberts, Ivy Lawson, Michael Andretti, Dan Gurney, Parnelli Jones, Sir Sterling Moss, Sir Jackie Stewart, and on through a virtual who's who of automobile and motorcycle racing. SCRAMP is a not-for-profit corporation that donates net proceeds from each race season to the volunteer organizations that help put on the events. So in any case, that's pretty cool stuff. I think it says a lot about MotoGP coming back to Laguna Seca in the future, you know, well past 2006 for, you know, for 2007 and beyond. At least I think it says that. I'm hoping that nobody's going to go out and spend $7 million for, you know, basically this premier star MotoGP race and then have it not show up after one more season. Hopefully attendance remains high at those MotoGP races and we don't have the problems that we had in the early 90s here at Laguna Seca of, you know, what if we had a race and nobody came, that sort of a thing. Last year, I think they were really pleased with the attendance and the quality of the fans. I remember there were comments made by the Laguna Seca staff that, you know, that it's just like, wow, these, you know, there was no trouble. Everybody's, you know, these are very serious race fans. They were here to enjoy the races and you know, not just sit around and get hammered and who knows, pick fights or things like that. So that's a really good thing and kind of good news. Okay, like I said in the intro, this particular segment coming up is a little bit old news, but I didn't get to learn about it and read about it until just recently, you know, due to my 2-week training thing there. I was gone. So it's new to me, and I think it's interesting enough to talk about. There have been several team changes since this news was sort of compiled, and I'm going to try to cover that, you know, while I do it through here. And we're not just reading a press release. I kind of cut it all up and made a new article out of things. But in any event, we're talking about the testing that happened at the end of November at Sepang in Malaysia and Jerez in Spain. So most of the MotoGP teams tested from November 28th through the 30th at either Sepang or Jerez. This was the last testing before the winter test ban, which prohibits testing from December 1st through January 20th. So they wanted to make the most of it and give the factory guys something to do while the riders all took a break. Most of the teams went to Malaysia to take advantage of the warm weather there, but Ducati chose to stay closer to home at Jerez, along with some of the 250cc teams. In Malaysia, the first day was hot and humid. No big surprise there. All the Honda teams except the Konica Minolta team tested, so Nicky Hayden and Danny Pedrosa were riding the factory Repsol Hondas, Tony Elias and Marco Melandri were on Cresini Racing Fortuna Hondas, and Carlos Checa and Casey Stoner were testing on the Camel Honda Pons bike, which that is one little item that has changed since the test, as we just heard earlier here in the episode. It's just Pons Honda now, and maybe not even that. Hayden tested a combination of the latest chassis developments from HRC and a range of front and rear tires, while Danny Pedrosa rode a tailor-made version of RC211V with a smaller tail, differently positioned footpegs, and an isolated exhaust pipe to prevent it from being bothered by the excessive heat of the standard underseat exhaust. That special RC211V was run rumored that we had heard about before and then had heard would not happen, but apparently it kind of did. Although it's not really like it's all that different. It's just sort of minor mods to account for his small size, and it makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, they typically do these sorts of things for riders anyway. Stoner, coming up from the 250cc class for 2006, spent the day covering as many miles as possible to try to get used to the bigger MotoGP motorcycle. And he did quite well until he lost the front and slid off into the gravel trap. Melandri was still suffering the after effects of the flu, and he decided it would be best if he ended the opening day early in order to save his strength for the remaining 2 days, so he knocked off about an hour early. John Hopkins was riding the new version of the Suzuki's GSVR, while Chris Vermeulen lapped on the 2005 machine for the first day there. Over at Yamaha, Rossi worked on tire testing before riding the new 2006 version of the YZR M1, while Colin Edwards and James Ellison rode the 2005 spec version. Ellison made his debut with Tech 3 Yamaha on a 2005 M1 on Dunlop tires. Remember that he tested a Ducati in November at Valencia and then was looking like he was going to be signing with Danton and whatever, got the offer from Tech 3 Yamaha and decided he wanted to take that up, but because of his relationship with Dunlop, apparently they're working out a deal there. So you're going to see a Yamaha and Dunlops in MotoGP next year, which be kind of interesting. And I think Ellison's got a lot of talent. I think that he'll be able to do well with the motorcycle. And other than the fact that you're, you know, dealing with the factory and the satellite team and all that, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how well he does compared to, you know, Colin Edwards and these guys. Okay. Shinya Nakano and Randy DePunier rode their Kawasaki Ninja ZXRRs with Nakano working on the 2006 model. The new Quokka features a new chassis and swing arm fitted with a smaller, more compact motor. And apart from a range of chassis and suspension setup options, Nakano also evaluated motors with two different firing orders in preparation for the 2006 season, plus a range of the latest Bridgestone rear tires. Kind of curious, they don't say anything more beyond two different firing orders. I wonder if they're trying to go away from the Big Bang, or if, I'm not 100% sure, else, you know, Big Bang with the cylinders on the outside and then the inside, Big Bang, you know, cylinders one and two, I don't know. But they're going to be kind of saying, and if for those of you that don't know, the Big Bang is when they have two cylinders firing simultaneously rather than a sort of more normal four-stroke firing order where it's, you know, bang, 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 bang. It's bang, bang, bang. And it delivers more tractable power delivery. Okay, unofficial times for the first day. First position, Marco Melandri on a Fortuna Honda with a 2.95 seconds. Nicky Hayden in second position, Repsol Honda with a 2:03.20. In third position, Carlos Checa, Honda Pons, a 2:03.58. Fourth, Danny Pedrosa on the Repsol Honda, 2:03.75. Fifth, Colin Edwards on the Galois Yamaha, still Galois for now, 2:03.78. Valentino Rossi, also on the still Galois Yamaha, at least as of the end of November, 2:03.80. Tony Elias on a Fortuna Honda, 2:04.05. John Hopkins on his Suzuki, 2:04.13. Casey Stoner riding Honda Pons, 2:04.29. Shinya Nakano on a Kawasaki at 2:04.9. James Ellison, the Yamaha, 2:05.1. Chris Vermeulen on the Suzuki, 2:05.56. And Randy DePunier on the Kawasaki at 2:05.60. Okay, on day two, the teams continued their testing and enjoyed better weather conditions compared to day one, allowing the riders to enter the track earlier in the morning. Rossi resumed his work on the new YZR M1, spending the whole day on the 2006 machine. He ended up posting the fastest time of the day ahead of the two Fortuna Hondas of Melandri and Elias. At one point, a minor incident saw Rossi cruising back to the box with a smoking machine, but apart from that small mechanical failure, it was a good day for Rossi. Rossi said, "The engine didn't blow up, but we changed the one that we used in the morning because the feeling wasn't that good." Today, we were faster, and the changes we made proved useful, so I'm quite happy. The bike we'll race in 2006 will be different from this prototype, but it's already more stable on the brakes than the 2005 version, which is a bit jittery. The power delivery is smoother, and it accelerates more progressively. Nakano was also pleased with his new Kawasaki package, which improves the bike's handling thanks to a more effective power delivery. The tests of the 2006 model were so positive that Nakano focused entirely on this machine, while teammate Randy DePinier continued to work on the 2005 model. Yamaha Tech 3, that's interesting. Kind of jumped around there. Sorry about that. Now we're going to talk about James Ellison. Yamaha Tech 3 team manager Hervé Poncherol praised James Ellison's work, underlining his excellent feedback while they assessed the potential of the Dunlop tires compared to Michelin's and Bridgestone's. Ellison was the only rider to complete a race simulation on that second day. Over at Suzuki, Hopkins continued to work on the 2006 GSVR, which, like the Kawasaki prototype, features a new chassis and a new engine, while Chris Vermeulen was still learning the Sepang track on the 2005 Suzuki. Unofficial times for the second day at Sepang. Number one, Valentino Rossi with a 202.61. Second place, Marco Melandri, a 202.65. Only, what, 4/100ths off Rossi. Not bad. Third place, Tony Elias, 202.78. Fourth, Colin Edwards, 202.94. Fifth, Carlos Checa, 202.96. So, five guys there in the 202s. Sixth, Nicky Hayden, 203.05. Seventh, John Hopkins, 203.1. Eighth, Danny Pedrosa with a 203.15. Ninth, Shinya Nakano on the Kawasaki, 203.52. Tenth, Casey Stoner, 203.56. 11th, Chris Vermeulen, 204.50. 12th, Randy DePinier, also with a 204.50. And 13th, James Ellison on the Yamaha, 205.52. The third day presented mixed weather conditions, with morning rain was forcing the riders to switch to full wets, but the track improved quickly and it was completely dry by the afternoon. So they're back on slicks. Ellison was the first rider to take to the track riding his Dunlop-equipped M1, and other riders who rode in the wet morning conditions included Hayden, Pedrosa, Nakano, DePinier, Stoner, and Vermeulen, although Vermeulen still didn't test the 2006 Suzuki prototype as was planned, because teammate Hopkins indicated that it required further development. Kind of interesting there. Hopkins said, no, can't ride it. It's not good enough yet. All of the riders made it out onto the track in the afternoon, and Colin Edwards got the opportunity to test the 2006 version of the M1 that Rossi had been riding for the first 2.5 days. However, Rossi was unable to complete a scheduled race simulation due to the weather. Honda's latest evolution of the RC211V should be available for testing in January, so all the Honda riders made do with their 2005 versions there at Sepang in November. Pedrosa did very well on the third day while riding that 2005 machine. He posted the fastest lap of the day. Times for the third day. Danny Pedrosa on the Honda, 202.77. Nicky Hayden, 202.79. Third place, Marco Melandri on a 202.86. So we got three Hondas there in the top three. Fourth, Shinya Nakano, Kawasaki, 202.93. So day three definitely saw a shakeup in the times. Fifth, John Hopkins, 203.10. Sixth, Carlos Checa, 203.39. Seventh, Colin Edwards, 203.61. Eighth, Casey Stoner, 203.70. Ninth, Valentino Rossi, ninth spot, 203.85. Tenth, Tony Elias, 203.95. 11th, Randy DePinier, 204.27. 12th, Chris Vermeulen, 204.50. And 13th with a 205 flat. The move to the MotoGP class proved to be a steep learning curve for Pedrosa and Stoner, both of them having their eyes opened as to the physical demands of the big bikes. As Pedrosa has stated many times since he made his switch to the MotoGP class, the jump to the Premier class is much more demanding than the sort of natural switch from 125cc bikes to 250cc. Pedrosa insists that he has not undertaken any specific training to build up his body strength, and although he posted some promising lap times during the 3 days, he put in a lot less laps than the other riders, and he only went out on short bursts as he quickly became tired. Old Pedrosa might want to reconsider that physical training plan, maybe get some nutritional supplements or some dumbbells or something, because he's going to need that. He can't do the race in short little bursts. Stoner also had a hard time trying to tame his 350-pound machine, which is quite a bit heavier than the 220-pound two-stroke 250 that he rode last year. Stoner also concentrated on short runs punctuated by breaks to enable him to recover. By the end of the second day, he was suffering from arm pump problems, and he came back to his hotel early to get massaged. He revealed that he found braking the most demanding area and plans to work on his physical strength between now and January, and hopefully Pedrosa will be joining him. Meanwhile, at Jerez, the Ducati team were testing their own new for 2006 model, the Desmos Adici GP6. Unfortunately, it rained at Jerez as well, and this delayed the start of testing. In the morning, both Ducati MotoGP team riders were only able to carry out a rapid bike shakedown, but they took to the track again around 1:30 p.m. and continued testing for the rest of the day. With low temperatures and damp patches around Jerez, conditions were not ideal, but Loris Caparossi and Sete Gibernau were able to put in their first serious laps with the new bike in the afternoon. They also had a 2005 version available in the pit garage for eventual back-to-back testing, but on that first day they concentrated exclusively on the new GP6. Sete Gibernau spent the day getting used to his new team, machine, and surroundings. It was virtually a debut for Sete with Ducati, seeing as in the previous test at Valencia, the weather conditions did not allow him to do any serious testing. He completed 52 laps, his best time being 142.606, slightly faster than Caparossi's 142.644. Sete said after the session, "It was a good day today. First impressions were good, and I'm more and more convinced that I made the right decision, especially because I can see that everyone, members of the team and Bridgestone personnel included, really want to do well, and they have a lot of faith in me. That's what I was looking for, and I'm happy to have found it. We've got a lot of work to do, but the most important thing is that everyone has a great desire to work. Today I started to get familiar with the Ducati and the Bridgestone tires, as well as the team's working method." Yeah, whatever. On day two at Jerez, the weather conditions improved, enabling the team to make the most of the second day of testing their new GP6s. Caparossi continued engine management work aimed at improving the bike's rideability, and he was satisfied with the GP6's immediate feeling. He was also able to take advantage of the improved track conditions to test several new Bridgestone tires, as well as new Olin suspension bits. Gibernau continued to get used to the Ducati and the Bridgestone tires and concentrated mainly on setup work. Caparossi completed a total of 60 laps on the second day, setting the quickest time of 141.489, while Sete totaled 66 laps with the best time of 141.466, slightly better. And the third and final day of testing in Jerez, marked by clear skies and sunny conditions, but a cold wind meant that Loris and Sete could only take to the track at around noon. Following day one's convincing debut and days two confirmation in the improved track conditions, for the final day of testing, both riders preferred to concentrate almost exclusively on the GP6. Only Caparossi went out for a few laps with the GP5 towards the end of the day, which was useful to confirm some developmental notes they had taken. The riders also tried out several qualifying tires to give indications to the Bridgestone technicians. At the end of the day, Caparossi had completed 64 laps, setting a best time of 140.947 on qualifying tires and 141.394 on race tires, while Gibernau had completed a total of 60 laps with a 141.024 on qualifying tires and a 141.609 on race. So like I said, that November test session was the last one until January. There's another test scheduled for Sepang, January 23rd through the 25th, Hopefully we'll see the new Honda RC211V and have a clear indication about some of the team shakeups and what's going on and figure out exactly who's going to be where. This stuff that just hasn't quite come together yet. And as always, I will let you know when that stuff happens. All right, that's going to do it for today. Like I said, it's good to be back. Glad to be making another podcast. Thank you very much for downloading the show. Thanks for subscribing in iTunes. Welcome aboard all you new listeners. This is really cool. The ratings, if you can call them that, are looking really good. Very encouraging stuff. If you get the chance, maybe go to podcastalley.com and cast a vote for MotoGPOD. I'll put a link for that on the MotoGPOD website as well. And you can go there and vote for MotoGPOD as one of the podcasts if you like. And it doesn't really mean anything. It just sort of puts us in the most popular podcast on Podcast Alley sort of thing. And don't forget that there will be another episode next Friday, which will be the last one for 2005. Not 100% sure yet what the topics are going to be, but I'll find some good stuff, or maybe I'll just make stuff up. I don't know. I've been meaning to get to some tech segments. I'm going to try and do one of those and get that ball rolling. It just takes time to prepare it. And In any event, have a Merry Christmas, or if you downloaded this after Christmas, I hope you already had a Merry Christmas. And, of course, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus, whatever it is that floats your boat, whatever you want to celebrate. Just do it safely and don't drink and ride. And in any event, I will talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.